Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Beat me up on the mamas of all mama shit.
Hey, I'm looking through my telescope and I see a mothership. Is that you? Beam me up.
Hey, D.A., I'm thirsty, man. Can you beam me up for a cold one?
Hey, D.A., what's going on, baby? Stop me off and beam me up.
D.A., what's the dealio? Permission to get in that mothership.
Is my window seat still available? Beam me up.
What's going on, D.A.? Hey, man, I need you to do me a huge favor. My co-worker's a jerk. So just beam me up, man.
Get beamed up. Everyone else has. It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
And a happy Wednesday to you, boys and girls. We come to you live for the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. As always, you can watch the show as well by going to watchda.com and check out the digital broadcast there. That's watchda.com, which is a good idea right now because we have a history-making guest in our midst. He's in studio with us. Formula E will make sports history this weekend with the New York E Prix. Saturday and Sunday in Brooklyn, Formula E will become the first motorsport to race in New York City. Formula E is the world's first full electric single-seater racing championship. And joining us is Daniel Opt, who joins us from his home native country of Germany, now in the States, here in New York City to race coming up this weekend. Dan, how you doing?
I'm very good. Thanks for having me.
You got it. My pleasure, man. So you guys are trying to set some history here coming up. Have you seen the course? Have you walked the course, driven the course? What's it like?
I haven't seen it yet, but of course, before we come here, we always go in a simulator. So we have it kind of produced already on a game, let's say, so I know how it will look like more or less. But of course, it's something else once you're here and once you see the skyline in the back and everything makes it special. But just can't wait to see it and race here.
Whenever I've driven around Brooklyn, it's all gridlock and all traffic all the time. So I think that you guys won't get the normal Brooklyn experience. They're going to shut down all these streets for you.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's a permanent, not a permanent street track. It just gets built up for this time. And we are used to do that with Formula E. We always go in city centers, and I think it's just something special because we really try to bring racing to where people are, to not having them travel very far away from cities. So I think it's going to be a great show for sure, and to race in New York is, it's a dream that comes true.
How fast can you guys get driving on street courses with e-cars? What's the top speed?
Well, you got me now because I don't know what it is in miles. It's like 220 in kilometers per hour. But okay.
All right, we'll do the translation for you guys. Check what 220 kilometers per hour is in terms of miles per hour. How different is it driving an e-car versus a regular car, an electric car versus a regular car?
Well, let's say the basis of racing or driving is not too different. I mean, it's still a race car. It handles more or less the same. Of course, with an electric engine, you have a kind of instant torque. So the way you apply the throttle changes a bit. You have to be a bit more sensitive. And then what also comes into play is energy management, because we have a certain amount of battery. And if we go flat out all the time, we would not finish the race. So they try to bring that in as a strategy element. So we kind of have to save energy at some points in the race. And that just creates different types of strategies and good overtakings and really fun racing. Yeah.
Daniel Opt joins us here in studio. Formula E racing coming to Brooklyn coming up this weekend. So that's kind of interesting. If you're talking about normal racing, at least like NASCAR racing, there's pit stops and you got to fuel up again. You got to change your tires and everything like that. You got to have the pit crew ready to go. Is that the same in e-racing, or are you guys just trying to finish the entire race without any pit stops?
We have a pit stop, but it's very different. And actually, we have two cars, and in the middle of our race stint, we come in the pits with the car we started with, and then we change the car. So we hop out of the car, get into the next one, and then go again. Because, of course, with Formula cars, you don't have a lot of space for battery and everything. So the range is limited. And just to make the race longer, for the moment we have two cars. But in season five, we're now in season three, this will change and we'll get an upgraded battery. And then, just race with one car.
Interesting. Okay, so you're in season three of the e-racing league, the e-pre. Yeah. And so now you guys have two cars, but in 2 years, you'll just go to one car.
Exactly. I mean, the main goal of motorsports always is also to, to prove technology and to develop technology. And of course, when Formula E started, they had to start with something, with a package that works. But the goal was always to improve the battery, to improve the e-motors, and just try to, force the technology forward with motorsports and competition. So right now, for sure, the plan is to have only one car with one battery in season five.
So 220 kilometers, we've done the math, is 136 miles an hour. So that's pretty damn fast to be driving around the city at 136. So do you plan to top out at 136 coming up here on Saturday and Sunday?
Well, that's depends on how long the straight is here. I think it's not too long, but it's for sure. It's not just the top speed. It's also everyone knows how bumpy the streets are in a city, and then to race and be on a limit and everything.
We got a lot of potholes around here.
Yeah, I hope not too many on the racetrack. But but for sure, it's a challenge to keep the car on track. And I mean, we have no runoff areas. If you do one mistake or if you just misjudge your braking point by a little, that's just a wall. So it's tough.
Are you prepared for a few Brooklynites to go, hey, out of my way! Got where you're breaking down over here! I'm trying to walk across you. You might get a few birds thrown your way, you know.
Well, I'm not prepared for that. I don't hope so. But for now, I'm just trying to enjoy and have fun.
So when you grow up in Germany, do you get out on the Autobahn and just like let her rip? Is that where you first get your speed demon tendency from?
Yeah, well, in my case, I was born in a motorsport family, so all my dad, my grandfather, everyone was into racing, and actually we're also tuning cars. So I was born with that. So you get into racing very quickly, but of course, we have the Autobahn where I live. We have like a very long part where you have no speed limit at all. So you just go flat out all the time. And actually, just last week, I had an American visit me. And we went on the Autobahn because he was curious to see how it is, and he was enjoying it. He was having a good time.
No speed limit on the Autobahn. How many lanes wide is the Autobahn?
It depends, but it's definitely different to here. I mean, here you guys have a lot of lanes and a lot of space. We, let's say, normally have two lanes, and if there's enough space, we have three lanes. But, it's not so good, not so much space.
How fast have you gotten on the Autobahn?
Okay, now we have to do the math again. But
we'll do the math. How many kilometers?
340.
340. Do the math for us on that. 340 kilometers per hour is how fast you've gotten on the Autobahn.
Yes.
And what car were you using?
An Audi RS6, tuned by our company, so it has like 730 horsepower, so it's pretty fast.
Okay, is that the fastest car you've ever driven?
Well, in terms of top speed, I'd say yes, yeah.
So that's 211 miles per hour on the Autobahn. That's amazing. That is amazing. 211 miles per hour. And is it straightaways? Is there curves in the Autobahn where you can get 211? Is it just really, really gradual?
Well, I'd say if you do 211, you have to have a straight line. If there's a corner, it might get a bit tricky. But of course, it's not just straight. The Autobahn has corners, but you can still, with the cars we have, with the roads we have, you can still go pretty damn fast, for
That's
sure.
That's amazing. I mean, if you roll down the window at 211, what does that sound like? Does it sound like you're breaking the sound barrier? Like,
yeah, you just have a wind noise. I mean, you shouldn't stick your head out, that's for sure, but it's fast.
You know, have you ever been in the passing lane of the Autobahn and then think like you're doing 150 or 175 or how many kilometers, and then somebody comes up behind you real fast, you're like, holy crap, how fast is that guy going?
Doesn't happen too often to me because I'm lucky.
Because you're a race car driver.
Exactly, and I'm lucky to have a fast car, but that happens for sure. I mean, it's not just me going fast out there. There's two types of people. There are the ones that go pretty slow and sometimes forget to look in the mirror, and then you come really fast and they just pull over and make you brake hard. And then there are the other ones that when you are already fast, they try to push you even more.
So what's what car do you own right now if you just were driving around normally?
At the moment, I drive an Audi TTRS.
Okay. That can go pretty fast, too.
That can go pretty fast, yeah.
You get that on the Autobahn?
Of course.
Of course. That's amazing. So our friend over there in the blue shirt, Pete the Body Bilotti, just hit a possum a couple of weeks ago. An opossum with his car, and it did $1,500 worth of damage. So he's very upset. He's now in a rental car. He just got it back. Have you ever hit a vehicle? Have ever hit an animal when you were doing 211?
Honestly, no. Guess I was lucky. Of course, you have a lot of flies on the windscreen.
Yeah, right.
But there's nothing you can do with that. But apart from that, I never had damage to my car, actually. I'm pretty safe with it.
So probably he's just a bad driver.
I don't want to say that now.
So in Germany, known as one of the great party countries anywhere, I've been to Madrid before, and I don't think I went to sleep before 8 a.m. every single night I was in Madrid. What's your favorite night out in Germany? You're a young guy, 24 years old. I don't know if you're single or not, but you're a race car driver, a good-looking guy, 24 years old in Germany. I'm sure you do very well for yourself. So what's a good night out?
Well, it depends, but I think for Americans that never been to Germany, I'd say what you really have to experience is the Oktoberfest in Munich. You know, it's like 2 weeks or 3 weeks of absolute craziness, people drinking beers and just, everyone's just on the limit. So I think that's something you have to experience. Other than that, of course, you can have a lot of fun in Germany. We have no real limitations on, like, I don't know, in LA, for example, where you have to go to bed at 2 or you have to leave the
club at 2
or something.
Ridiculous in LA. They think they're a big party town. Everything closes at 2 a.m.
Yeah, it's really weird. Like, when I arrived the first time there, that's normally, in Germany, you probably start going out at 12 or 1. I don't know how it is here, but so when I arrived in LA for the first time, I was a bit confused how that works.
Yeah, but, exactly. Yeah, when I was in Spain, everybody said, well, you got to go to Germany because Germany, it's a real party over there. So I can only imagine.
Yeah, I mean, I think Spain is also good. If you go to Ibiza or something, you can have a lot of fun for sure.
Yeah, few of us can get to Ibiza. I think they would stop me at the border and be like, no, you're not in. You're too nerdy. But, you know, we'll let all the pretty girls come in. But, yeah, that's probably a really good time. So when you're in New York, what do you want to do? Do you want to see the sights? You're going to go see the Statue of Liberty, Empire State Building? What's going on?
Yeah, for sure. I want to see a lot. Yesterday, we already walked on the Brooklyn Bridge and went to the 9/11 memorial and everything, just to see everything. I've been here before when I was young, so I was already on the Empire State Building. I've seen the statue already, but I think it's good to refresh my mind a bit. And then there's not so much time. We have today, we have tomorrow, and then we have to think about racing. There's one thing I want to do. I want to do a helicopter flight over New York. I saw a picture yesterday that made me I have to do this, you know.
Now, we got to tell Dan, what does he need to eat while he's in town? Does he need to eat a hot dog off the street? Does he need to eat a slice of pizza?
Obviously pizza. That's
pizza
the
over
obvious.
Hot dog?
I would go pizza, definitely rank number one, but how do you not start a morning with a New York bagel?
New York bagel, yeah, that's a good one.
It's life-changing for breakfast.
Life-changing. So, yeah, you need a bagel and then pizza because also you're from the land of Wiener Schnitzel and, like, really good hot dog type of things. You don't need a New York hot dog, I wouldn't think, coming from Germany.
No,
right?
No, I wouldn't think so either. A New York pretzel, although those are popular in Germany too, I think, right?
I don't know. Yeah. Pretzels and Wiener Schnitzel and sausage. You guys do all that really well.
Yeah, we also have pizza. It's not that we're not from the moon.
But how is German pizza? What do you put on German pizza?
We don't have German pizza. We have Italian. We have a lot of Italians.
Oh, yeah.
So, I don't know. I've never seen a German do a really good pizza. We let the Italians do that. And, it's fine.
Yeah, that's a good point. You guys are pretty close to Italy, so you probably have maybe better pizza than we do. So we are real idiots here. Okay, so coming up on Saturday and Sunday, this is very cool. Formula E will be making sports history this weekend in New York City. It's the New York E Prix. Saturday and Sunday in Brooklyn, Formula E will become the first motorsport to race in New York City. And can people watch this online if they're not in New York City? Can they watch this somewhere?
I do think there's a Facebook live stream. Okay. I think it's also on Fox Sports or something here in the U.S.
Okay.
So for sure, there's plenty of ways to watch it.
That's awesome. Yeah, that'll be very, very cool to check out. I can't wait to see how this works out. Street racing in Brooklyn could only imagine what that's like. So this will be on FS1 coming up this weekend, guys. Okay, FS1, which is very cool, which is the E-Pri in New York City. Daniel Opt joining us, Formula E race car driver. Man, this was a lot of fun. Thanks so much. Good luck this weekend.
Thank you very much.
When we come back here on the show, more on that Mo Bamba story, and we'll jump back into your phone calls as well.
I'm a little wet, a little drippy.
Getting a little wet, getting a little drippy this morning here on the show. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Get zapped while the sun is out.
I'm a show enough D alien now, sir. I will be calling back soon. Thank you so much, DA, from Starville. Hail State.
DA on CBS Sports Radio.
Watch the show at watchda.com. The digital broadcast goes on every single day while we're live on the air. Then once we're off the air, it's all good. The most recent episode airs on loop until we're on the air again. So if you ever want to kill time, just watch the most recent episode of the show at watchda.com. It's also mobile friendly. That was very eye-opening to have Daniel Opt, another DA, by the way, Formula E race car driver from Germany. He's from a race car family, and the E-Pri is electric cars that they're trying to kind of push a little bit in terms of building that series up, and that's going to be on FS1 this weekend in Brooklyn as a street race. But he said on the Autobahn, he's gotten up to 211 miles an hour. 211. I can't actually contextualize that. I can't imagine what that is. As I was saying during commercial break, I mean, if you hit 100 miles an hour on any major New York or anywhere in the United States interstate, which is the only place you're going to get up to like 110, 120, 100 miles an hour, is on the interstate. And if you get up to that and you're lucky enough that, you know, it's open, it's clear, there's perfect road conditions, it is crazy fast. To go 100 miles over that is just insanity. I mean, if you go 120, 130 on an American interstate in the middle of the night in perfect conditions, everything's rattling, everything feels like it's going to fall apart. I mean, when I push my car over 70, it feels like the car is going to fall apart. 211? 211 might as well be the speed of sound. 211?
The steering wheel shakes at 72.
Seriously. Could you imagine hitting 211? 211 miles an hour?
As I told you, my heart would start racing and things wouldn't be good. Put it this way. I would be fearful with my cholesterol level that I would have a natural heart attack if I tipped over 140. At 211, I might as well be dead. Yeah, I wouldn't be able to enjoy it. Like, that rush of enjoyment, I could never enjoy that rush.
Imagine the time you would make in terms of driving. If you could go 211 miles an hour.
Get to Camden Yards in a half an hour.
Seriously. That's so insane. Gabe is next up in Riviera Beach in Florida, listening online at CBSSportsRadio.com. What's up, Gabe?
Oh, just enjoying the brief, peaceful moments. How about you, DA?
Doing well, man. What's up?
Well, make it really quick. First of all, the evils of the head of lettuce. Now, there are individuals out there that are members of the Chobo Nation, and the dictator himself from time to time has admitted to removing lettuce from his sandwich.
Yeah.
And apparently, this is actually a good idea after something I have found out nutritionally.
Mm.
Apparently, the head of lettuce, not the romaine, not the long stalk. The long stalk is actually very good for you. But the head of lettuce contains a unique acid. And if you've ever noticed someone get on a diet kick, they eat all this salad, and then all of a sudden you notice they get some bad throat infection, or they get a cold, and they got to get on all these antibiotics. What happens is the head of lettuce itself, the lettuce, absorbs any nutrients your body's trying to absorb, and then you just pass it through. And then you're not absorbing any nutrients, and you get sick. So the head of lettuce is evil. Never consume it. So the dictator's been right all along. So anyway.
Who knew?
Moving on to something you guys discussed yesterday, and a light bulb went off in my head. The individuals that have been witnessed eating fast food sandwiches, a burger, or enjoying a sub wearing surgical gloves.
Yeah.
I have my own theory on this.
Okay.
I myself, even here in South Florida, I've noticed in the past 3 or 4 years, especially with friends of mine, individuals, and there's probably members of the Chubbo Nation who are probably going through this right now. You'll have individuals that they'll have a girlfriend or a wife that all of a sudden she wants to be a plant-based vegan non-GMO. And she has to drag the boyfriend or the husband along with her misery becoming a vegan.
Uh-huh.
What ends up happening is these guys start going nuts. They're like, my God, I got to have a burger. I got to have a hot dog. I got to have a sub, something. And these women, some of these women, they become so nuts, they even inspect the man when he walks to their house. They inspect the clothing, see if there's some kind of mustard or mayonnaise stain somewhere. Or they especially, this is where a light bulb went off in my head.
Yeah.
Any of you that have enjoyed a decent burger with all the condiments, the lettuce, tomatoes, onions, pickles, mayonnaise, ketchup, mustard.
Yeah.
That smell gets embedded in the tip of your fingers for at least 24 hours. You cannot get rid of it, no matter how much washing or scrubbing you do.
Okay, so Gabe in Florida is suggesting that the weirdos that we were talking about yesterday that are eating out with surgical gloves on are doing it to protect themselves against the evidence against their vegan non-GMO girlfriends. I don't think so.
How can this be?
I just don't think so.
It's not a bad working theory.
It's an interesting theory, but, I mean, come on. What we know is that these guys are crazy OCD weirdos, paranoid from everything that's happening around them, and it's not to protect themselves. I mean, maybe there's a few of them like that, but I think, by and large...
Yeah, and if you get a look at these guys eating with the surgical gloves, they don't look the kind of guys who have, like, the good-looking vegan girlfriends.
Exactly. That's right. I mean, right, because... The guy at Subway that ate with the surgical gloves, let me guess, he was like over the age of 50.
He looked like an assistant coach in the AHL. He didn't look like Daniel Oppt, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, so my guess is the idea that he had a vegan, non-GMO girlfriend, highly doubtful.
If it is, I would be vegan in a heartbeat.
Interesting working theory. I like the creativity behind it, but I'm not buying it necessarily. Okay, so... The Mohamed Bamba story is, to me, one of the craziest in recent memory, where Mohamed Bamba is one of the top recruits of the nation. He's likely to be one and done and go to the NBA lottery next year. And he decides to go to Texas. And after deciding on going to Texas and playing this upcoming season, a huge, huge recruit for Shaka Smart, his older brother goes on Facebook Live and spills the beans that his younger brother, top recruit, has been taking illegal benefits and gifts from a go-between, okay? A friend of the family, but not part of the family. Basically, a white guy that swooped in to give this guy a bunch of gifts to win him over to become his agent, which happens a lot in amateur basketball, okay? Now, this went to the NCAA, obviously, as his brother created a national story by saying these are all the gifts that he took, and I know, and I'm reporting him to the NCAA. The NCAA came back after 2 weeks and said, Mohamed Bamba is eligible. Mohamed Bamba is eligible to play for Texas this year. And their reasoning was that Bamba and this other dude, this older guy, developed a relationship early enough to where it couldn't be certain that the guy developed a relationship with him, a friendship, a mentorship, because he was good at basketball. That he's a mentor in both academics and athletics, and it goes early enough to where it was before Bamba was identifiably really good at basketball in the fourth grade. Also, they found that this guy gave benefits and gifts to Bamba. They're not denying that. But that he has given benefits and gifts to other people, not just good basketball players. And so it's showing this mentorship and gift giving that cuts across the athletic barriers. Okay? So because it was an old enough relationship, they deemed it not based on basketball, and he gives lots of gifts and mentoring to other people, that it's legal. I don't know, none of us know, whether this is an illegal relationship. Because how could you know the intent of this dude? How could you know the intent of, in fourth grade, seeing a kid, mentoring him, Maybe his family doesn't have a lot to eat, you take him out to eat. Maybe his family doesn't have a lot of money, you buy him a bicycle or whatever. Who could say that that was the intent to be his agent one day? But the odds that this happens a lot, and again, you can't prove intent, very, very high. And why did the NCAA do it like this? Because they don't want to open up this can of worms. Could you imagine if the NCAA started cracking down on all of these very shady relationships between high-end basketball players and quote-unquote friends of the family mentoring these kids? I mean, you'd have nobody eligible. So the fact is, do I think there's something shady going on? Probably. But two problems the NCAA didn't want to run into. A, they didn't want to validate Bamba's older brother snitching on him, because then you would have a lot of family members or a lot of friends or a lot of colleagues snitching on players, okay, because of rivalries, because of people being upset they got cut out of the gravy train. Okay, they didn't want to go down that road, because then you would have everybody telling everybody how many gifts these guys get illegally. And number two, if they come down to Mohamed Bamba, then they got to start coming down on all these kids that have all of these weird relationships with all of these guys that are not related to the family that buy them a lot of stuff. Knowing down the road, maybe you get to be his agent, maybe you get to be his publicist, maybe you get to be his advisor, but there's usually a salary that comes along with it. Again, I don't know about this specific guy. Maybe he's not gravy training, but it happens often enough to where the NCAA doesn't want to have to police all of it. And they looked at this, and this was, I mean, let's face it, they're admitting Bamba got gifts from this guy since he was in fourth grade. Fourth grade! They're admitting this happened. And they're rationalizing it by saying, well, it didn't necessarily have to do with basketball, and he's done this with a lot of other kids that aren't good at basketball. They didn't want to touch it. That's what it comes down to. They didn't want to touch it because it was going to mean that was going to mean a bigger headache for them. And I don't think it's fair that Mohamed Bamba was going to get snitched on by his brother to where it could ruin his basketball career. I didn't hope that he got caught, but you can see what's happening here if you read between the lines of the NCAA.
I'm a little wet, a little drippy.
When we come back here on the show, sound check your best audio of the day, including Calvin Johnson taking shots at his former team. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
We are the glitch in the simulation.
An ass whipping's for so long.
DA on CBS Sports Radio.
An ass whipping's only an ass whipping for so long. Matt Mitrione with words to live by. Welcome back, DA, with you. And a little reminder, the best of the show is on YouTube every single day. So if you want to watch some clips, the best of the show, the best rants, moments of the interviews and everything else, just go to YouTube and CBS Sports Radio's YouTube page. You'll see them uploaded every single day. My man Chuck is next up in Nashville, listening on the radio.com app. What's going on, Chuck?
Hey, brother. How you been? How you doing, man?
I'm good. How you been?
I'm good. Just transitioning from music into hockey, and it's been kind of fun. So looking forward to getting to Montreal and that. But I had a bit of an idea. I know I may have mentioned that I'm not a big fan of all-star games, but I think a thing maybe for hockey or even for some of the sports that play so long is, the skills, maybe. You get 20 guys, possibly, but fans want the interaction. You know, they want to see the things that I would think. I mean, this is just my opinion, but things that they normally don't see, you know, maybe at practice or things of that nature. And then also the interaction with players. So you have a guy or guys each, you know, one time a day for autographs and photos, people queue up. And they get, you know, a couple of minutes with maybe somebody they'd never, ever have a chance to talk to. And hockey especially, I think it would work. I've been to a few of the weekends. And just making an event. I mean, the game itself is,
is trash. I mean, let's just be honest. I don't think guys want to play it. But, I mean, maybe if it's something more fun, more entertaining, more interactive.
Well, I think meeting the fans and autographs and meet and greets and things like that is it's a great idea to do more of. I think there's more than ever a wall that's built up between us and the athletes. And the athletes probably put up that wall for good reason because they're inundated by social media and there's more demand of their time than ever before for media stuff. And there's more attention on all the bad things that they do more than ever before. So they probably feel like they're always being watched anyway. And then they start putting up their wall and then meet and greets and meeting fans and those types of things are, you know, maybe they want to avoid those. So I think that that's always a benefit when you get to know these athletes. I mean, there's a lot of good guys that play professional sports. A lot of them, the bulk of them are good dudes. So I think that that could be part of it, but that doesn't get to replace the All-Star game. I mean, the fact is last night's All-Star game was pretty boring. And doesn't matter how many fans got to meet the guys there, it's not going to make that event any more interesting if the baseball's not more interesting. As I mentioned before, you know, it was ridiculous that an exhibition game for the last 13 years in the middle of July could somehow define who gets home field advantage in the freaking World Series. It's just too absurd of an outcome. We know how much Game 7 of the NBA matters. Historically, how important Game 7 was of who has home floor, who has home court, who's at home. Imagine deciding that by the All-Star game in February. It's just so stupid. I can't believe it ever took root in Major League Baseball. I will agree, though, that last night it did feel like some of the air was taken out of the tire, but it can't be that we decide Game 7 of the World Series and where it's going to be played on a silly exhibition game in July. We can't do that. So there just needs to be a better reward. It can't, though, be where Game 7's being played in the World Series. No way. 855-212-4CBS. Twitter, DA on CBS. Time for your best audio of the day.
CBS presents this program in color.
An educated person can't think he's going to get a recruit by strippers coming in.
They can fire you, but they can't eat you.
And they run through our ass like through a tin horn, man, and we could not stop them.
The audio you need to hear. It's DA Soundcheck.
All right, so there were a few weird moments in last night's All-Star game, and obviously Fox was trying to juice it up a little bit after it doesn't count. This time it does not count. Where Bryce Harper was mic'd up on the field, then A-Rod was doing on-field interviews with players during the game, and Yadier Molina on Fox, Cardinals catcher, discussing the moment. Nelson Cruz asked him to take a picture of Nelson Cruz and umpire Joe West.
That was a weird moment right there. I mean, I didn't know what he said at the first moment. And then I was like, yeah, I take a picture with you and yo. I mean, it was a great moment, funny moment.
It's a lot of weird moments last night. And what do you think about Fox's broadcast? Let's just say in general in football, where do you rank it in terms of how they broadcast a football game?
I think Fox is the best at broadcasting football in my mind. I think the picture looks the best. I think the innovations look the best. And I think everybody else is following Fox's lead in football now.
See, I think NBC is the best. I think watching Sunday Night Football is the cleanest graphically. I think the way that they broadcast, it's not overdone. See, Fox can overdo things like crowd shots and other things. And then the Fox robot bothers me and the sound effects. And when they put those stupid graphic Christmas lights underneath the score box.
See, I like that. I think that's cool.
I hate that when the leaves are falling on top of the score box. I mean, that's just, it's hokey.
They were the first to bring a referee, an official into the box.
For whatever that worked out great.
I think Pereira was good. I think they have a second one this year.
Mike Carey was so bad he got canned.
But that's the point. Other networks have tried to follow because Carey was with CBS. I just think when I'm watching a game on TV, for whatever reason, Fox just pops more than the other broadcast teams. I don't know how to describe it. Like, it just looks more lively on my TV, and I think they do an excellent job with it.
I think NBC is the best, but I think Fox doing baseball has always felt weird because it's the Fox attitude in a game that is not attitude-based.
The glowing puck in hockey.
Yeah, and so last night, I mean, they tried to juice it up with all these types of in-game interviews and mic'd up stuff, and that felt forced to me.
Yeah, but they're trying to make their stars more personable because the NBA is a sport that's grown based on their star power. And baseball is trying to mic up their stars in an All-Star game and bring this to you. If the game's not going to count, why are you watching the All-Star game? Well, they're going to try to bring you an innovative, different way to do a broadcast. I didn't mind it.
So you liked last night?
I actually did like last night. I thought the game was boring, but I thought the way Fox did it with everybody mic'd up and all that, and A-Rod, I thought it was pretty good.
I don't mind trying new things. I think sometimes, though, Fox feels very forced and very hokey. Conor McGregor, yesterday as part of the pre-hype of the fight coming up later on in August, guaranteeing a win.
He's in a tracksuit. He can't even afford a suit anymore. The Rolls is at 2012 outside. He is. There's no other way about it. His little legs, his little core, his little head. I'm going to knock him out inside 4 rounds. Mark my words.
Yeah, there's almost no chance that happens. So Conor McGregor is a tremendous artist in terms of showmanship and trash talk. He is all energy and all muscle and all bravado, and he's great. He knows how to dig at the opponent and yet still be likable. He can back it up. He has this army of supporters. I mean, the guy is box office, but I don't care how many times he says he's going to knock out Floyd in 4 rounds. That's never going to happen. And finally, where do you think Calvin Johnson was yesterday talking about football? If you guessed Italy, you'd be right. If you guessed to preview the Italian Bowl 37, you'd be correct. And Calvin Johnson not happy with the Lions.
Just like in basketball, you know, guys, you know, they create, you know, these super teams. But it's not quite like that in football where I had the freedom just to go. I was stuck in my contract with Detroit. So, and they told me they would not release my contract, so I would have to come back to them. So I didn't feel like there was a chance for them. I didn't see a chance for them to win the Super Bowl at the time. And for the work that I was putting in, you know, it wasn't worth my time to keep on beating my head against the wall, you know, and not going anywhere. It's the definition of insanity.
So what he's saying there is I didn't feel like I should force my way to another team because you couldn't just build a super team so that I could win a Super Bowl. You know, Calvin Johnson played on a lot of bad Lions teams, and Calvin Johnson still had football left, and I'm disappointed Calvin Johnson decided to leave because the guy was a Hall of Famer, will be a Hall of Famer, still had football left, and was trapped in a dire situation. I guess he could have forced a trade. Now, he signed a huge deal, so he kind of made himself untradeable in some ways. So part of that is you make $130 million. Guess what? It's not ever. You don't have a ton to gripe about, but in terms of sheer competitiveness, I feel like I was watching Barry Sanders again. One of the greats of all time, trapped in an organization that couldn't get out of its own way. That's your sound check. So the second part of this is that he was doing a promotional tour for the Italian Bowl. None of us here had ever heard of the Italian Bowl. And frankly, I don't think Roger Goodell has ever heard of the Italian Bowl. Because there's now been 37 Italian Bowls. Once a year, they've got a 12-team or 10-team Italian football league that plays American football. And they have huge rosters. And it's filled with Italian players. It's not really like NFL rejects. It's not really like Canadian Football League rejects. It's mostly Italian guys playing football on 70-man rosters in a 10 or 12-team league and going to a Super Bowl with a three-tiered playoff system. It's remarkable. It's remarkable. And why are they trying to shove football down the throats of Londoners and in England and all this when in Italy there's actually been a league for 37 years playing football? Now, I'll tell you, I love some of these team names too. The greatest dynasty, Meraz, in Italian football league history is the Bergamo Lions.
You've heard ironic for Calvin Johnson.
You've heard, that's right. You've heard of them, right? They won their first Italian Bowl in 1993. There then was a four-year layoff. Think about like the Patriots, okay? Then they came back and they won in 98, 99, 2000, 01, 02, 03, 04, 05, 06, 07, 08. They won 11 in a row and 12 in 16 years.
And Calvin Johnson is saying you can't build a super team in football.
Who says? The Bergamo Lions did.
Wow.
Yeah. The last two champions have been from Milan, the Milano Seamen, last year's champs.
They tanked. They trusted the process, had a couple big draft picks.
And the year before that, the Milano Rhinos. They beat up on your Bolzano Giants.
Wow, we got Giants and Lions in this league?
Yeah, we sure do. We have the Parma Panthers, too. We've got the Ancona Dolphins.
Okay, so now we're just copycatting now at this point.
Well
they probably had the Panthers first.
They may have. I mean, this is...
Maybe that's where Jim Fossil's coaching.
This is pretty great. I mean, who would have known? I feel like we need Jolton Joe DeLuisio to do some Italian Bowl highlights for us. Because who would have known? 37 years, a full-fledged league. And I guess Italian Bowl is coming up here in a couple of days. Oh, yeah, this will be the Milano Seamen versus the Milano Rhinos. It's a Subway Series. The last two champions. When we come back here on the show, why would the Lakers want Rondo?
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.